You're listening to the Bitcoin.com News Podcast. Today's guest is Robert Rodin, the CEO of Keychain XAG. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Hello. How are we doing?
Doing great. Okay, Robert, so would you please start by introducing yourself to our audience and let us know how you got into this business of wallet recovery?
Basically, what we do is when people forget their passwords to different kind of wallets, I help them to gain access to them, or if they have some hardware or a computer that crashed, we recover the keys and move them for them. I've been doing this since 2017 when a friend of mine asked me to help him with a ledger. And since then, we've been helping hundreds and hundreds of people with recovering their crypto.
Wow. So you have to be like one of the leading experts in this field if you've recovered hundreds of wallets. Can you tell us, what is the size of the market for wallet recovery?
The size of the market changes when the market value changes. 2 years ago, when the market size was 100 or 200 billion, the market share was, 1 billion. And now when the market size is 2 to 3 trillion, depending on the price, like recently dropped below 2 trillion, I would say it's more than 100 billion. And that is two factors. When the market goes up, the value of the lost crypto obviously goes up in value as well. But recently there is more and more people that get used to crypto. And that means also more people losing it. So I would say it's also growing exponentially.
Got it. And can you tell us, just to start, what type of wallets do you handle? What type of clients come to you?
Basically, we handle any type of wallet that we can extract or see that there is an encrypted wallet or encrypted private key. That we can figure out how to decrypt it. In the beginning, there was mostly Bitcoin Core and blockchain.com. Then we also do Ethereum. And last year, when the Dogecoin price shot up, so wallets that were worth a few hundred bucks 4 or 5 years ago started to become valued like a few million. So you have new blockchains like Solana and Cardano that we didn't really see any of those wallets a few years ago. But recently, when the adoption is growing on those blockchains, those wallets are starting to get lost as well.
Got it. So can you share with us some interesting stories about some big wallets, or maybe old wallets from back in the day that you helped recover?
We recently recovered 2 months ago on the Ethereum presale wallet that had 1,000 ETH, which at the time when we opened it was 4 million. The guy had a long password that was almost 100 characters. It was 99. It was quite funny because it was a sexually explicit password, where he was writing what he and his girlfriend should do with each other. And the guy was using a French keyboard. He had the password backed up on a cloud service. And usually what's happening when you have non-English passwords, some of the software, depending on which browser you use, which computer, they get mixed up or they get scrambled. So this guy gave us this long password. He said he tried for many years. He tried to guess or do all kinds of different things. And then when we got it, we worked on it for a few weeks and got it open. So that was a nice one. Another interesting case we had was last summer. There was this truck driver in the US. He had a wallet with 10,000 Doge. So at that time, it was worth 30 cents a Doge. It was 3 million. And he had a phone where he had a 12-digit PIN number. And that wallet, he simply forgot. And then it turned out like some of the numbers he usually used, like a social security number or PIN code for his credit card, was part of the password. But then, of course, there were some numbers that he chose randomly. And what we did was we simply wrote an algorithm and recovered like within 2 days. And again, in this case, he tried some other services. He tried it for a few months and came to us, and we solved it like within 48 hours.
Amazing. Can you tell us about something about, you know, developing these algorithms, and, you know, how do you run them? I've seen, you know, basically you have dedicated servers that, you know, just crack open these things. Can you tell us more about that?
There is different type of algorithm depending on which type of wallet. Like if you go to let's say an Ethereum pre-sale wallet, that one has a specific algorithm that can be opened with a GPU card, and I would say it's a fast algorithm, which means we can do a lot of password checks a second. Then if you go to the newest Ethereum wallets, which is version 3, it is a script algorithm, which is impossible to run on a GPU card. Instead, you have to use a CPU or a custom-built computer. And for those, you can only run like 20 password tries a second, which means it's like a 10,000 times slower algorithm. On the other hand, if you look at, let's say, like a Bitcoin Core wallet, it's in the middle. You can probably do like 10 or 20,000. For a wallet like Ledger, which is hardware that you have some words, so that's a completely different one, because there you have 12 or 24 words. And what you need to do is you need to match the missing words or the words that were error. And in few cases, people also use like a 25th word, which is what some people call you create a shadow wallet. So in case you lose the ledger and you lose the 24 words, someone walks in and check that wallet, and it maybe has, you know, $50. But then if you add like the 25th word, it's like what the big stash is. So depending on what kind of wallet, when it was also made, we need to adapt and change the algorithms. And usually it's like Python scripts or C# scripts. And hardware-wise, it's anything. We invested like close to $1 million in hardware development.
Wow. So I'm imagining a big server racks, like mining, basically what you're doing. You know, you're mining for passwords.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good angle, because what some people are like discussing is if you could use an ASIC to actually, you know, break a password. And I think it's possible, because basically the ASICs are doing a hash. And when we are looking for a password, let's say for Bitcoin Core, it's actually a hash of the password that we look for. So in that you know, context, it's possible. But on the other hand, you also, by the time you open hundreds of wallets, you see how people create the passwords. You also see how people made mistakes. So you also develop like a routine that you check for the most common mistakes. So if someone has a password where the password is Johnny123 explanation point, you realize that on some of the password people has like a fat finger, so they have a double character in the middle, or they press space before they enter, or they simply forget one character. So sometimes you don't need like a huge server that costs, you know, hundreds of thousands. Sometimes I just open wallets on the go with, you know, in a bus or in a taxi where I have my laptop.
Well, yeah, I guess there's a lot of psychology involved in this. You basically learn how people, you know, try to hide, because I think everybody does that, you know, in private, obviously. Nobody shares the way they design their you know, their password. So you're definitely in a very unique position to have you know, people sharing everything with you.
Yes, it's also very sensitive, right? Because sometimes they say that the password that we give you, or the passwords that we use to a lot of other stuff, or the numbers that we give you, or like codes to my safe or to my credit card. So it's very much about trust as well, because you don't know who's on the other line. And I mean, if I would lose a key to my safe, I wouldn't just send my guesses to the combination to a random guy on the internet, right? It's it's quite obvious. It's dangerous.
So, you know, that's interesting. So how do you, you know, instill trust in your clients? Like, how do you make them come to you and not, like you said, some other guy on the internet?
I mean, the best thing for us, it's word of mouth. It's the more wallet we open, the more we work in the space, the more people are telling their friends about us. So in the beginning, when we started in 2017-18, it was a huge problem because we were new and nobody knew about us. And we got a lot of emails like, you guys are probably scammers because I can't find anything about you. So what we started to do, we started to write a blog on Medium where we explain different cases and how people could do themselves, like do it yourself. We started to visit conferences. So we go to like Token 2049 in London, Rome Blockchain Week, Blockchance in Hamburg. So when you're visible on those, people get to know you, and you know, you can stand in the booth and chat to them, and you're not just, you know, a fancy page on the internet or a pseudonym that, you know, post a link on Reddit that we can help you. And of course, we also get a lot of people that tell us that they've been in contact with someone and they gave them the hints and the encrypted wallet, and boom, it was gone. And if we can reverse the transaction, so. So, you know,
that's got to be painful.
But it's like with everything, every business you start to run, if you, the longer you stay in the business and you keep on doing what you're doing, the more your reputation grows. So that's basically.
Mm-hmm. So can you share with us, you know, for our audience, any trends that you're seeing now, or, you know, just issues that are repeating? Of, you know, how people, you know, lose their crypto, stuff that, you know, they need to be aware of.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I would do is when you see that there is an upgrade for your wallet, or you, it asks you to do something like both Ledger and Trezor and MetaMask and blockchain, they change the code, even Bitcoin Core changed the code. So before I would update, I would just double check on a separate computer that the password or the 24 words or that the private key I have, that it works. Because we see more and more of when people upgrade the wallets, suddenly the funds disappear. And there is a huge dispute between the people that do the upgrade and the wallet providers, that they claim that it's not their fault, it's the same type of wallet, and people claim that they've been using the same wallet for years and suddenly stops working. So that's a trend we'll see. Another trend is that we see wallets like people have NFTs, that there is not much funds in them, but there is like an NFT. So we also see a lot of people that have family members that passed away, and they're stuck with a hardware wallet that they don't have a PIN to, or they simply have an encrypted file that they don't know what to do with it. So it's also when you have funds, you know, more than you know, like a small amount, you should also think about what happens if you pass away, or what if you are not able to access that, if someone else in your family should access it. So you should also think about those things as well. Because of wallet, a wallet that is today maybe worth, you know, a few thousand could be worth a few million in a couple of years.
No, for sure. I wonder, you know, if there's anything that can be done. You know, I think in retrospect, there is nothing that can be done. You have to take the steps right now to protect, you know, your ability to pass away your coins once you're gone.
Yeah, I mean, it's a new space, right? Like 10 years ago, this whole space was not there. And with all new things that are coming, that you need to figure out ways how to protect it. And also when the value of it grows, there's a higher number of scammers and people that try to steal those from you. Like you saw this OpenSea phishing attack that happened over mm-hmm. the weekend or last week, that people got an email that they thought was OpenSea, and then they clicked on the link and boom, or their NFTs were gone.
Yeah, it's a very you know, it's a space where you have to keep vigilant all the time. You know, you gotta be very wise with your crypto.
Yeah, I mean, it's like everything. Like you should be as wise as you are with your credit card or you. You know, your bank account or PIN. So, one thing that I realized is that for people, because it's so easy to do one click, it's so easy to open a wallet, people think they will do it later. But I know people that, you know, installed, let's say, an Exodus on an iPhone. It doesn't ask you to write down the words right away. You transfer some funds and you think, oh, I will write down the words tomorrow. And then after a week, you drop the phone in the water and it's gone, and then you realize I never wrote those words down. So you have to treat the crypto like, you know, it's value, because it's easy to make some money in crypto, but it's also very easy to lose it.
Yeah. So can you share your vantage point, like best practices for wallets? Like, would you say that a hardware wallet is necessarily better than, you know, like a phone-based wallet or you know, something running on your laptop? How do you see it in terms of security?
You know, in my point of view, a hardware wallet is the same as a phone. So you can basically buy an Android phone, which are pretty cheap. You download a software wallet on it, or you just have a text file on the phone, and it's basically the same as a hardware wallet that you buy or order from the big, you know, like Trezor or Ledger. Personally, I don't have them because I don't trust them. Because I've seen so many people that, you know, have an old hardware wallet that is defunct because of various issues. And I would keep more than one copy, definitely. So and in more than one location. So there's people that used to have a safe in their house, and they were renovating their house. And then when they moved back, the safe was gone and they only had one. So even if you have, let's say, one backup, that backup could be gone. So I would always keep two copies. And of course, you also have to think who you have to trust. We have like had stories that a guy says like, I found this 24 words in my dad's safe. Can you guys help me recover it? And then we realized, you know, it's a family member. Or we had a guy that says his brother moved the funds for him, and can we recover it? So it's a hard question. It's a tough issue, right? So on one hand, you have to trust other people, and on the other hand, you have all these scammers that try to get it from you. So it's a headache.
And I wonder, have you ever been approached with what you thought were stolen wallets?
I've been approached with like very suspicious wallets. I cannot 100% say I know they were stolen, right? Because I haven't seen like a police report. But I've been in situations where I've been invited to an expensive hotel in Dubai, and three gentlemen walks in, and they scheduled a meeting up hand before me because I was there for a conference, and they showed me a phone with a wallet with very suspicious big amount. It's like 1.2 billion US. And they show me how they try to move it, and it doesn't work. And I get very suspicious, and I tell them that I need to check out a few things. And after checking the amount with blockchain, I realize it's an exchange multisig wallet. And usually what I do in those cases, I just walk away, because in first of all, it's I don't know who they are, and on the other hand, it's pretty dangerous. So I don't want to get in a situation there, you know, I risk something.
Yeah, you gotta have strong ethics in a business like that, you know. A lot of scammers there out there, you know, you don't want to get it in trouble with.
Yes, both that and I guess, you know, it's like the new law that is coming in place in the US, that when you move funds for someone that you don't know who it is, you're getting responsible for it. In that case, in the US, it's the IRS, right? But I don't want to move a big amount for someone I suspect it's not theirs, because then I get a phone call from someone I don't want to get a phone call from, and they tell me I've been doing illicit business. So yes, it's a very sensitive.
It's very interesting. So you mentioned the you know, just running on two mobile phones, and I wonder if a you know, if there's a situation like that your mobile phone is stolen, you know, with a wallet on it, and they go to someone less scrupulous than you, someone that you know won't check, like how much at risk is your crypto?
It's very much at risk, because a phone is very easy to break into, even an iPhone. So whatever you do, then you should always have a backup. And in that situation, you should just move the funds. I mean, obviously myself has lost the phone or forgot a phone in a place I shouldn't forget. And I have some crypto in my phone. So the first thing I do is just move it to a new wallet right away.
Yeah, you got to be vigilant with that, I guess. But is there no way that, like encrypting the phone or doing something that's, you know, it's at least going to give you more, you know, like some more time until you can react?
Well, when you have a phone, you should have a PIN number, right? So you should have a very long PIN number. I would not use biometrics, because some people says that when they use the biometrics on the phone, they're not very secure. So sometimes it stops working, and they never had a password. They just had the biometrics. So that's one thing. And also, if you store your wallet, also what I usually do, I scramble it. So I know, let's say, if it's a few words, then I just remove a couple of words I remember. So I don't, you know, always store all of it. Or I just add something to the private key that it doesn't look like a private key. Because let's say you have like a Ethereum private key, you know how long it is, and you know what characters should be there. So by adding some characters that shouldn't be there, I know that even if someone takes it, they will not know what to do with it. But that's how people also come to us. You know, they add tricks to their words or private keys, and then they forgot the tricks.
Yeah, I was about to say it's a trade-off between you know, what you would remember, and, you know, because, yeah, I guess at the time, you're sure to remember those words, but after 10 years, you know, if you didn't touch some Dogecoin or something, and then it's suddenly worth millions, right?
In those cases, you can do a few things. One thing we're working on is a patent pending in the US where you have a social recovery, which means you split up your private key with a number of family or friends, and then they cannot recover it with their part. But if you have, let's say, four of six, you can recover your key with that. Or there is new banks now that you can have in their custody. So it's not like exchanges that are not regulated, but like real banks. So in Switzerland, you have, for example, Signum Bank, or you have SEBA. And they're like just like banks, but they have your crypto. So as long as you have your ID, you will be safe. So if you want to trade off the self-custody and you're afraid of that, then there is other ways, you know, to store it.
Yeah, that's an issue for somebody who has enough money for, you know, those type of problems, right? My guess would be, or my advice would be probably to, you know, be diversified enough. So, you know, like have some of it in custody, some of it in, you know, in your self-control, and have that making, you know, not be in a single pot that somebody can steal, right? But
like you said, you know, diversify. Like we have one case, it's a guy that lives right now. I don't want to say too much about him because I don't want to disclose him. He lives in around Australia. He had a huge wallet with several thousand Bitcoin. And he tried to move it to a new wallet. But the mistake he did was that while he had the Bitcoin Core open, he copied the wallet. And miraculously, somehow, the Bitcoin Core didn't save the private key. And then he closed the computer. And then when he opened it again, he had the wallet, but the couple thousand of Bitcoins were gone. And that's a couple of hundred million now. So,
yeah.
Like you said, you should diversify if the amount gets big, right? Because if you lose it, then you want to lose like one third or like one quarter of it, not all of it.
For sure. With amounts like that. So can you tell us about, you know, recently there was a viral video going around about the Trezor hardware wallet hacking. Can you tell us, like tell us your take on that, if you saw that?
Yes, this is a long-known flaw that was in all Trezor wallets, Trezor 1 from pre-like 2016. They patched the bug. But basically what it is, it's a side channel attack where you buy a piece of hardware. You can even build it yourself for like $100. And you send electrical signals to the Trezor. And it basically, after a few times, it bypasses the PIN. And if you connect it to like a text editor and do some magic with some coding, you can basically see the PIN number and you can see the seed. So it's a very easy thing to do. It's been shown on you know, a lot of conferences over the last couple of years. There is even a device called a chip shouter that you can buy for a few $1,000, which exactly do this. But it's a flaw that is not really a flaw anymore because they closed it. And I was pretty amazed that it got so much, you know, publicity for something that everybody knew about for a few years, and it's not viable anymore. Because if you connect your Trezor and you upgrade it since like 4 or 5 years, it's not working.
Yeah, well, I can see why it went viral, because it touches like a very, it touches a nerve, right? People that use hardware wallets, they think they're totally secure. But if you don't follow and you don't know that it's already been patched and you don't know that you should have patched it. I guess it's more scary than it's really is.
Yeah, and I mean, in a couple of years, you don't know like what flaws will be discovered, you know, in Ledger wallets or Trezor wallets that nobody knows about today. So it's when you upgrade them, you introduce new code, and when you introduce new code, I would say you also change like what happened in the history. Like you have this web wallet called blockchain.com that constantly upgrade the code. But if you used to create a wallet like seven or 8 years ago, those wallets are not accessible anymore because they changed the code so much, so they doesn't recognize them. So it's, you know, it's both good and bad, all the upgrades, like never-ending upgrades. So the easiest thing, if you have the words in plain text or if you have the private key in plain text and you keep it safe in at least two places, then I think you're good.
Yeah, I was just about to ask. So, what would you suggest if upgrading, you know, brings its own new set of bugs potentially, right? And but keeping the plain text protected on two sources, one hidden at the bottom of the sea, another one on a moving truck, I guess that's
There's actually a pretty cool hardware wallet, or not hardware. It's called Crypto Steel, and what it basically is, it's a metal like beholder. When you have these little metallic letters and numbers, so you can put your key inside this thing. It looks like a lipstick. And then you can drill a hole in the concrete wall in your cellar and stick it in there. And even if the house burns down, the crypto steel will be there. I mean, I've seen burned crypto steels several hundred degrees, and the private key is intact. So I wouldn't write it on the paper. I would buy something like that.
Yeah, but then you gotta etch it also yourself, right? You can't send it.
It comes with a. With a pool of letters and numbers, so you just put them in the wrong order, in the right order.
Ah, okay, yeah, that sounds very smart. For anybody out there that needs a fireproof password, have you seen, like you mentioned, NFTs are coming up? What about MetaMask? Very popular right now. Have you seen any bugs with MetaMask that people might lose their wallets because?
Yes, MetaMask has been very popular because, like you said, NFTs like OpenSea and Rarible or LuxLair, you actually log in with your MetaMask. That's one of the main things in Web3. And when it gets popular, of course, there's more and more people that are having problems. One of the problems is there's, I don't know if it's a bug or if it's like something they did wrong, that when your drive getting full, MetaMask just crashes. And what people do, which they shouldn't do, is they reinstall the MetaMask. And what they're actually doing, they're overriding the old wallet. And, they panic and they think it's all gone, but it's not gone. It's possible to see the cache because if it's like a Chrome or Firefox browser, it sometimes keeps the old wallet encrypted in the cache, in the browser data. And another thing that is also possible is it's to run through the hard drive byte by byte. And even if the file is deleted, it might be not overwritten. So the first thing I would do is just stop using the computer right away and contact someone like us to fix it for you, because most cases could be solved if you start to look at it right away. But the more you use the computer, the bigger chance it is that you override data. Like the person I mentioned with Bitcoin Core, we looked at the file and we can see that there is some parts of the transaction with those thousands Bitcoin. But before he contacted us, he used the computer for a few weeks and tried to solve the problem himself. And he ended up losing it all because he tried, you know, think he can fix it himself.
Yeah. So I think we covered a lot of ground today, but is there any other issues that you think that our audience need to be aware of in the recovery space and, you know, losing passwords and all of this, interesting subject?
I mean, you have to be cautious, right? Like the OpenSea phishing attempt, it's just, I would say just the beginning. You will get more and more emails like where it claims to be from this and that. There is a lot of scammers going around pretending to be blockchain.com support. There is like this leak that Ledger had a year ago where one of their, you know, partners leaked the data to. So scammers got all the addresses of all Ledger clients and started to send them, you know, emails that they need to upgrade, and it was a fake Ledger site. Also, when you go into a site like my Ether wallet or my crypto or any site, you should also check the link, because I've seen recently there's a lot of Google ads that are actually fake sites. So when you go in there and you enter your private key or your words, you're actually sending the scammers the words. So it's basically like triple check wherever you use your crypto. And also, like, if you have a MetaMask and you have approved the different sites to use your crypto, like when you interact with them, you should remove the approval, because you don't want it to sit there forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you gotta be vigilant, like we said. Okay, so I want to thank you so much, Robert, for taking the time and, you know, sharing some of your valuable experience with us.
Thank you.
The links to your website, as well as the email for anyone that needs help with recovery, will be in the description below. So yeah, thank you very much, Robert.
Yeah, thank you, Chulan. Have a good day.